is just a simple song to say what you done. I told you about all those fears and the way they did run. You sure must be strong, and you feel like an ocean made warm by the sun. When I was just 9 years old, I swear that I dreamt your face on a football field and the kiss that I kept under my vest. Apart from everything but the heart in my chest, I know that things can really get rough when you go it alone. Don't go thinking you gotta be tough, play like a stone. Nothing else in our lives so critical as this little home. My life in an upturned boat, marooned on a cliff. And you brought me a great big flood, and you gave me a lift. Girl, what a gift. Tell me with your tongue, and your breath goes in my lungs, and we float over the rift. I know that things can really get rough when you go it alone. So don't go thinking you've gotta be tough, play like a stone. Could be there's nothing else in our lives so critical as this little home. Will this so be a simple song to say what you've done? I told you about all those fears and the way they did run. You sure must be strong, and you feel like an ocean made warm by the sun. Remember walking a mile to your house, glow in the dark. I made a fumbling play for your heart, and the axe struck a spark. You wore a charm on the chain that I stole, especially for you. Love's such a delicate thing that we do with nothing to prove, which I never knew.
Another
the slow train to the coast. Some brand new Goriak from way on high. I sink and then I swim all night. And watch the ice melt on the glass. While the eloquent young pilgrims pass. And leave behind the trail. Imploring us all not to fail. And of course I was raised to gather courage from those lofty tales so tried and true. And if you're able, I'd suggest it, 'cause this modern thought can get the best of you. But this rather simple epitaph can save you, hide your fallen mind. Fate isn't what we're up against. There's no design, no flaws to find. There's no design, no flaws to find. I know I got this side of me that wants to grab the yoke from the pilot and just fly the whole mess into the sea.
It's 88.5 KCSN. The program is Connections, and our guest is James Mercer from The Shins. First of all, thanks for playing for us. It's great to see you again.
Cool. No, thank you.
So much to talk about, but why don't we just sort of go back maybe 5 years, last time around, Shin's record. Last time I saw you, I think, was here at the Village where we're recording this set. And you've had an interesting time in between Shin's records. You've had a couple of kids. You've had the side project, I guess, of Broken Bells.
And I did a movie.
Oh, tell us about the movie.
Well, I did. A friend of mine, Matt McCormick, is a director, and he made a feature-length film and asked me to audition for it. He was kind enough to ask me to audition, but I'd never done anything like that. And so, but yeah, it's called Some Days Are Better Than Others, and it's, you know, like an indie film that I have a part in. I'm not like the star.
What was that experience like for you? I mean, obviously you've been in your own videos before, but actually acting out somebody else's words.
Right. Oh, I mean, it was weird. It was like a total challenge, you know. And I was curious about it because I had enjoyed. He had made a few videos for us, and it was fun doing that. So I was like, oh, this would be like an extended version of making a video, which is an enjoyable creative thing, you know. But it was. I mean, it's. I don't think I'm naturally an actor. You know, so I have this new respect for people who are good actors and stuff. And I learned a lot about the filmmaking process and you know, which was kind of cool. It was educational.
Did you learn enough to want to do more?
If it was something like that where somebody would be willing to work with me, you know, and make it work. I mean, it was really fun in a lot of ways. And you know, I enjoy challenging work like that. It was hard work though. I mean, it killed a few months really making that. So, but yeah, if I could fit it in and it was something cool, for sure. Carrie Brownstein is like the star of the film and stuff. Like, it was kind of cool.
Was it easy for you to learn your lines? I mean, obviously, you know, you've learned plenty of songs over the years.
It wasn't as bad as I you know, was afraid it could be, you know. I think that, I mean, the challenging thing about it is being around a bunch of people and then trying to access some emotional state that you wouldn't normally be feeling. I mean, and, you know, so I think that was what I learned that good actors actually do, which makes it even creepier. They're not faking it. I mean, that's the thing, you know, they're actually feeling that messed up
Well, the good ones.
Bizarre. The good ones, yeah, I guess. Right. I mean, you know, but, you know, from my point of view, I suppose even a mediocre actor, it's pretty impressive.
Was there anything from that process that has informed your songwriting? Is there anything you bring back from that process into your other work?
Well, I mean, it was another one of those experiences that gave me confidence, you know? So I think that on this record, I hear, to me even, I think I hear a bit more sort of a confident posture to my, I don't know, maybe it's just the performance and maybe the adventurousness of what was done in the production and stuff. I mean, I think it would show itself there subtly. You know,
so the album's called Port of Morrow. Obviously, we've heard Simple Song, and it's one of the ones that you're doing for us. How long was the process of making this record, from writing to recording?
It's hardly you can't really include the writing almost, because some of the songs have been floating around for years and years.
Well, let me ask you about that. I mean, yeah. You know, I talk to a lot of musicians, as you know, and some people give themselves hours to write. You know, like I've said this before, people are probably bored with it. But, you know, Nick Cave, for example, goes to the office and writes songs.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But it sounds like a lot of people will write songs, scrap bits, bring bits back.
Yes.
Is that how it works for you?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely, when I heard those stories about Nick Cave, I was very impressed, you know, and I think there are times when I try and have that approach. I mean, when it comes time to get a record done, you know, you definitely have to buckle down and I do get up and get dressed and go out to what I call the barn, basically, which is where I have my studio now.
This is up in Portland, right?
You're still up in Portland. Yeah. So we have we have an old house that we're fixing up and stuff. And in the back was what they call a carriage house. You know, it's a garage basically, but it was built before they had cars, you know. So we fixed that up, and now I have a place to go where the kids can't distract me and stuff like that. So I do make a concerted effort when it's time to really buckle down. But the thing that I usually am doing as far as writing is just sort of, there's some time of the day where I'll pick up the guitar and just mess around and just try and come up with something new, which is my favorite thing to do. So I do that constantly, and therefore there's this buildup of like a library of little ideas. And so that's what I kind of sort through when it's time to really get my head around what songs I want to do for a record and stuff.
Where do you record those? Do you record them onto your laptop? Do you record them into...
Lately, it's my phone. You know, it has been for years and years. I have little micro cassettes, you know.
Uh-huh.
So those go back. I have those going back from about like 2009 to 1992.
Do you ever go back to old ones and just pop them in and just be like, oh my God, what was I doing in 1995?
Yeah, and it's a lot of bad stuff. You know? I was kind of... Actually, even during this process of starting this, I did that. I went back and listened to stuff that was when I was in college and stuff. And I was hoping that there would be some little diamonds in the rough or something that kind of wasn't. It was like a lot of drony shoegaze ideas that, you know, work if it's produced right and so on.
You talked about going out and getting away from the kids, which brings up the fact that, you know, since the Last Shins album, you become a dad. You got two mm-hmm. little girls, right?
Yep.
How has that shifted things for you? I mean, obviously, you're busier, probably throughout the night and in the mornings well. But as a writer, I mean, what does that bring to your work? It's a completely different life.
Yeah, it's definitely less time to write. You know, you're just busier. You know, there's just less of the sort of idle time. They will eat all of that up. So that's why the barn is important, obviously. But as far as you know, lyrically, and like maybe concepts that I've learned or developed because of having kids, it's surprisingly kind of dark things. Having kids, I found, it's sort of like suddenly an emotional tentacle of yourself is pulled out and is very fragile. And you realize that, you know, you just depend on the safety and well-being of these little kids, that, you know, it starts to get like peril is around every corner. I mean, we had a kind of a health scare with our youngest daughter, and everything's cool. She got it's all fixed and everything. But it was really scary. I think those sorts of things, you know, like just the fact that maybe having children, when you see on the news that some neighborhood has been bombed overseas, it takes on a whole new meaning. And the idea, these ideas that people would do something like that, become bizarre and poignantly dark, you know? Is that a phrase?
Yeah, I mean, I think it brings to mind two questions. Well, maybe even a comment, first of all, that, you know, most people are totally disconnected from those images that they see on the screen anyway.
Yeah, and I definitely, I mean, I think through my 20s and stuff, I, you know, because I think I'm a sensitive person to stuff like that, and I would be so offended by human behavior that I really shut myself off. I just decided almost not to care. Like caring
was too painful.
Would be too painful, yeah. And it would be, and it would be to no avail, you know. Kids end that. You care now, and the future of the world becomes so real to you, and it's the importance of, you know, doing it right is just so vastly changed. It's so increased, you know.
So again, then back to the lyrics. Are the lyrics on some of the songs on the new record informed by the experience of being a dad?
Yes, yeah. But like I say, it's kind of the dark stuff.
Well, can you give me an example?
Port of Morrow, the title track. I wish I had the lyrics in front of me right now because I haven't been playing that one. But you know, the chorus is about recognizing that in this song, I talk about the fact that the difference between the animal world and the human world, which we probably are raised, most people are raised to think that there's these differences, you know, there's a line between us and the animals, you know. I think that line doesn't exist, you know. And
are you vegetarian?
No.
Okay.
I'm not.
Just wondered.
But, you know, so that fact, the fact that humans are brutal and deal in death, I mean it's a thing that humans do. It's something we've always done, and it's just the darkness of that. You hide it from your kids, you know, and this I guess part of being a parent is that you hold the secret world of adults away from them.
Well, yeah, you're trying to protect them as long as possible.
You do, yeah. From us, from the humans, from the other adults.
Got it.
From the crap we do to each other. Mm-hmm. It's all this big veil that you want to keep for them, you know, as long as you can. And in doing that, you realize just to what lengths you go to hide what is basically their own nature from them. You know, they will become one of these creatures. And so just that is just such a strange thing to realize and have to face. I was not prepared for it. I mean, I didn't realize it would be that intense, all of this.
Talking of dark, you just showed me the video for Simple
right.
Song.
Yes, the Daniels. That's the Daniels. They're obviously dark and twisted.
Yeah, like you're blaming it on them, obviously. It's interesting because, you know, as a performer, obviously, and somebody who's writing these songs, and this song in particular, Simple Song, to then give it to somebody else to interpret.
Right.
And the video is actually, when we're running this interview, the video is actually not out there, so nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about. But give us a quick synopsis of the video, if you can.
Oh, man.
Because I don't want to give my version of it, because my version will be very simple.
Yeah. This just you even asking me that reminds me of the synopsis that I was given in sort of a very demonstrative way by the directors acting out, you know, and then this is going to happen. So it's a very complex, crazy video. I won't really be able to do it justice. But it's basically about a family. I'm the dad of this family. I've passed away, and I've left a will. On and on it goes. Anyway, the will says basically this is going to be a big competition. You guys are going to race and try and find the deed. Whoever wins it wins the house and everything. And then a big surprise twist ending occurs, and some horribly violent things.
Yeah, the family is smashing up the place, right, yeah, basically, because exactly. You know, they got to have somebody's got to win.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm just wondering.
You'd think that I had cavorted with these guys and figured out, you know. Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, like, you know, what is that like at the end when you see that, when you see that your song has now been completely reinterpreted into something?
It's really fun. It's really cool. I mean, I always enjoy that sort of stuff. It's like getting remixes done is one of the most entertaining things you can have. It's like somebody take their perspective on
taking your
stuff, music. Yeah.
Which is completely messing with it.
Basically. Yeah, it's just totally tweaking it. Or just, I don't know, I'm kind of fascinated by that. The way people will hear something you're doing and they'll hear like a different rhythm in it even. So like this is one of the great things about working with other musicians and collaborating and stuff is that, you know, you think in this certain way and you become sort of set in your patterns, and then you introduce a song to somebody and they to just hear a different nature in it. And so they'll interpret it differently and then come up with some totally different melodic thing that you never would have thought of, or like I said, a rhythmic thing, which is always really kind of cool.
Well, that brings me back to the album then, you know, working with other people when you're recording. Who produced this one?
Greg Kirsten produced this.
Now, I've met Greg a number of times over the years, yeah. And he does a lot of different stuff.
Oh, yeah. I know. I say he's the Michael Caine of music.
Don't get me started.
he's extremely talented, very sophisticated.
Michael Caine's done a lot of crap as well. So.
Well, yeah, but Michael Caine isn't crap in that work.
That's true.
So I definitely wouldn't want Greg to ever.
And Michael would admit that, by the way.
Right, yeah.
He has done.
Hey, wife wants a hot tub. No.
Greg's not
super picky about, you know, but I respect that. I like his work ethic. To me, that's just totally cool.
Why did you want to work with him?
I think sort of shit like that should, I think things like that should always take precedent over your concern about being cool, you know? And so he knows that he can bring something to any project and stuff. And so I appreciate that.
So what did he bring to the project?
Well, I mean, so much, you know. I really had roughly structured songs and some very sort of, I won't comment about it. I mean, I had put together some drum tracks and things like that with like rhythm guitar just to establish like the structure of some of the songs. That's what I went to Greg with. And he pretty quickly just sort of started transforming everything. And I mean, it was just so exciting. You know, like I went down, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I wanted to meet with Greg to possibly work with him as a producer. And so I came down to LA and I brought some music with me. And we put it up on in his studio and he listened to it a little bit. And he was like, yeah, we can definitely work with this. This is, you know, this is cool. And he was just like, can I just for a second? And he went over and he has, you know, all of these incredible old analog synthesizers. I mean, real antique things. And so he just starts fiddling around and puts some pads, some really kind of kooky old string sounds on this one song and just totally changed it. I mean, it was one of those situations. Like, he just totally changed the feel of the song. And I was really floored by it. And half hour later, I was just like, you're hired, man. Let's do this. He's great.
Where'd you do it?
Here in LA, largely. So a little bit, like I said, up at my place in the barn up there, but mostly down here in LA in his studio.
I can't talk to you without talking about Broken Bells, obviously, which is the main project, I think, musically that you've been involved with since the last Shins record.
Yep.
Now, first of all, that got a lot of great attention, obviously.
Yeah.
But it was a different thing for you as well.
Oh, yeah.
If you look at what you did with Brian on that record, did any of that come into this Shins record?
Yes, I'm sure in more ways than I even realize. But I mean, I what I learned about myself during that, one of the things was that I can sing in some other styles. I mean, he really, you know, encouraged me to break out of what was the pattern that I had created, you know, before, as far as how I sing and styles.
Did you feel you needed to do that?
I wanted to. It was so fun, you know, working with Brian and, you know, like some of the falsetto stuff that I did with Brian. I've always been a huge lover of like blues melody. So just those subtle note differences, and I have touched on them in the past, but with Brian, I really got a little bit more into that, and on this record, I expanded, I think, on that. So I was more adventurous after working with Brian. I mean, Brian is nothing if not adventurous in the studio. You know, I mean, he just experiments. It's all wide open. And that's, I didn't realize I actually had created so many like sort of boundaries for myself until I was working with Brian.
Now, was it easy for you to actually blow those apart? Or did you have to sort of push yourself?
Well, like when I'm when I'm working with Greg or something.
Well, if you think, like you said, you didn't realize until you were working with Brian that you'd created these restrictive ways of working. And
right.
I'm presuming.
I was so concerned about, like, I think I was overly concerned about what sort of indie-dom would think if I did this or that.
That's where I was coming from. Yeah, because the Shin sort of came out of this indie ethic.
There's a dogma to a lot of that stuff, to being cool. You know?
Don't you think it's over, though?
it's certainly better off than it was when I started in this.
Right.
You know, like in the 90s, it was really extreme, I feel like, you know, just like the rules, the subtle rules about what you could do and couldn't do. I don't know. Like, you know, you never could really be emotive while singing in that certain way. You know what I mean?
I think they
weren't allowed to comb your hair.
They really are gone.
They're gone. And it's great.
Yeah, it is kind of cool. So will there be more Broken Bells?
Yes. So we've got songs that we've nearly completed even that are for the next record, I guess. Or we'll see what happens. But yeah, totally. I just saw Brian last night, man. I love hanging out with that dude. And so we're definitely going to work more. And we've got another record we got to finish.
And you've been doing some other collaborations as well. In fact, I was just told you just recorded a song with Amy Mann.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
Man, what an honor.
Interviewed her a couple of times over the years. She's very cool. Tell us how that came
about.
She
was like the sweetest
And what
lady.
You've done.
She had this brilliant song that she sent to me, and I was just shocked and honored that she wanted me to do this duet with her. And so she sent it to me. I kind of practiced, rehearsed and stuff, and I came down and sang it. It's kind of it's kind of dark too, actually, that song. It's very dark. It's a couple that have...
She's dark.
She's pretty dark, yeah, I think.
Pretty dark.
Yeah, and great in such an awesome way.
Yeah.
And like rye, you know, which I love. So this couple has broken apart and they pretty much hate each other and they're singing very beautifully about it. So that's the song. Yeah, it's cool. I can't wait for it to come out.
Perfect for you in this moment. Where is that going to show up? Is it going to be on an Amy record?
I hope so. Yeah.
So let's quickly jump back then, obviously, to Port of Morrow, which is the album. You've put it out on your own label this time, although you've gone through Sony Columbia.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to do your own label at this point?
In part, it's something you always want to do. You know, you'd love to have the ability to do it on your own. And it's fun, you know, doing that stuff, sorting out, to an extent, it's fun. It's enjoyable. Like, you know, sorting out the sort of business of getting your record out there and stuff. But the reason that I was able to do it now is because of the generosity of Columbia Records, you know, that they are willing to do something like that with me. Is really why now it's possible. And they're really the label. They're doing the hard work and so on. I get to own the master and have my imprint on it and stuff like that. But there's some, I mean, it's kind of cool because Arl Apothecary is like the label that I created when I was, you know, going to Kinko's and cutting out the covers and you know, printing them on the Xerox machine and sending off the tapes to Darla. Record pressing plant and you know, just assembling all that stuff. So now it's kind of reborn.
So here we are just a couple of years later.
Right.
And the label actually is now a real label.
Yeah.
Which is kind of awesome.
Yeah, it's cool.
So touring, obviously. What's the year looking like for you?
It's looking like a lot of touring. It's looking like we'll be touring quite a bit and maybe going to South America at some point for the first time. We're playing Coachella for the first time coming up. We're just going to do our best to support the record, you know?
You know, I got to tell you before we wrap that, you know, I've spoken to you, I don't know, several times over the years, and you seem in such a different space.
I am, man. I am.
You seem very, very relaxed.
I'm relaxed more now. I'm just, you know, I had a watershed moment in my life about 5 years ago. And I just realized that I was closed off from the world.
Can you share that?
You know, it's, I mean, it sounds almost ridiculous or something, but I was asked to come down and sing at Heath Ledger's memorial service that was here in town, here in LA. Mm-hmm. And that guy, I had met him a couple times, you know, I didn't really know him, but an acquaintance. And well, all I can say is that guy had an impact on the people around him. And it was, you know, people went up and sort of talked about their memories with him and stuff. And they were just so touched. And so, you know, they had been altered just by knowing him. It wasn't just his death. You know, it was his relationship with all of these people had been so deep. I recognized that I was not going to have a memorial service like that. I mean, I was just closed off, you know, and that it scared me and really moved me. And I really decided that I needed to do something about it. I needed to stop that, letting that sort of fear and social anxiety, basically, I guess, is what it would be, or shyness or whatever, mm-hmm. You know, from letting me live this one life, you know, without ever really experiencing, you know, all the stuff that I could or should. And so I came home from that, and there had been this pending thing of going down to Patagonia and working with the Molloy brothers on a film called 180 Degrees. And I was nervous about it. I was not going to do it. I mean, it was asking too much of me.
Because of fear.
Because of fear. Right. I was going to have to be with a bunch of people I didn't know. I was going to have to play music and work with another musician.
Yeah, screw that. I'm
Mason
staying
Jennings.
Home.
I would have said no. I came home and said yes. And, you know, the next thing I said yes to was Broken Bells and the movie. And, you know, and so it's been kind of that I've had to force myself to, you know, to do it. But I've gained some confidence and things like that. And having kids, man.
Well, yeah.
And having a loving wife and all that.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah.
But I guess making those leaps, you know, jumping when you really don't know what's going to happen, but you do it anyway.
Yeah, and then you do okay, you know.
And it's like, okay, I'll do it again.
Right, and even if you don't do okay, you know, you did it, you tried. And,
right.
And that's better than just letting that fear, you know, allow you to waste your life or something.
Well, it's great catching up with you.
Good talking to you, man.
Pleasure to listen to the song Stripped Down Acoustic, obviously. And good luck with everything, obviously, but the Shins right now with the album coming out and the tour and everything. It's great to see you, James Mercer.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot. We're going to go back and listen to another couple of songs from our session.
All right, cool.
Into this strange, elastic world, Pontus kindly gave up a pearl. His eternal stone and mud, and ain't she lovely, bone and blood, born of the sea, a thousand miles away from me, court of angels, wards of the sun, a future forming, a curse undone. Softly burning lamps, she takes her time, telling stories of our possible lives. And love is the ink in the well when her body writes. I've been selfish and full of pride. She knows deep down there's a little child, and I got a good side to me as well, and it's that she loves in spite of everything else. A song in the tree distracted her mind, some other curious form of life has made its presence to her known, and she coos so gently, soft and low, the shining face in a million reflections on tiny raindrops that fall in a veil over our city like notes from above. But it overwhelms me, I just ain't that tough. It's not that the darkness can't touch our lives, I know it will in time. But she's no ordinary Valentine. And now, when the sun goes down, she sheds a darling light. I've been selfish and full of pride. She knows deep down there's a little child. But I got a good side to me as well. And it's that she loves in spite of everything in the wool you've been cornered by a natural desire. You wanna hop along with the giddy throng through life, but how are you learning to steer when you're grinding all your gears? And you've been talking for hours. Time will wash every tower to the sea. And now you've got this worry in your heart. I guess it's only life, it's only natural. We all spend a little while going down the rabbit hole. Taught you, they're lining up to haunt you. You got your back against the wall. Call you on the telephone, won't you pick up the receiver? I've been down the very road you walk in now. It doesn't have to be so dark. Back when you thought I'd never get this far. Ooh, but did you really think I'd shut an open door? The future's calling and I'm an answer. The wheel's in motion, I never drank your potion. Breaks your heart. Open up your parachute. Something's gotta stop the free fall. I've been down the very road you're walking now. It doesn't have to be so dark and lonesome. Takes a while, but we can figure this thing out. back around.